Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. My name is Marcus C. Speller.
And my name is James E. Campbell.
I'm Luke A. Moore.
And I'm Pete D. Dolls.
Hello, one and all. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's bloody lovely to have you here. It's another beautiful day in the kingdom, everybody. And Pete Donaldson recently had a birthday weekend, didn't you, Petey?
I don't know why you're bringing up my birthday right now, but I would like to let everyone know that I had a lovely weekend alone in front of my computer drinking cans of Tisky. I've adopted the Polish, I think it's Polish, lager drink as my tipple of choice. There is a Japanese connection. It is bottled or canned by Asahi UK. I'm a Tisky tit. That's me. That's me for my life now. You know, I've moved from Stella to Tisky.
So, Peter, what differed from this year's celebration to last year's celebration?
Very well, but more Tisky, basically, Marcus. That's how that one's panned out. So, yeah, that's pretty
it's
much
growth
the same.
In a way.
Yeah. Well, let's see how the big 4-0 goes next year.
Yeah, no way. You're the picture of youth.
Crocodile.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Oh, there we are. It's Star Wars Day today, Luke, isn't it? Of course, May the 4th.
It is. I am the one who shares the name with the most famous Star Wars character, I suppose. And my wife is obsessed with Star Wars. I've even agreed to watching the latest movie that's just been put on Disney Plus tonight. So that's what I'll be doing this evening to celebrate Star Wars Day. I don't know about you guys, but Pete, presumably you'll be doing nothing.
Well, now I might get involved with Star Wars Day. I mean, it sounds like whoever house it is, there's some kind of TIE fighter action going on in the background. I don't know exactly what's going on. But...
So basically, I'll give people a sort of a look behind the curtain here. Obviously, we're all recording for our respective homes.
Literally behind the curtain.
About 10 o'clock this morning when we're supposed to start recording, the next door neighbour decided he wanted to have a skip removed. And I thought, right, we'll just wait for that to get out of the way. And now he's decided to start strimming his hedge. And that's not a euphemism. He's literally streaming his head. So there's nothing I can do about it. He just has to get on with it.
Has he not heard that the entire nation / world has taken up podcasts? So,
exactly.
You know,
yeah. Have a bit of respect. Do it at 2 a.m.
Isolating vocals is the most important thing we can do as a nation right now. But happy May the 4th, everyone.
Pete, can I just also say, if you think that sounds like TIE fighters, you've never seen Star Wars.
I've seen one and a half Star Wars before. Is in on the Disney Plus versions, have they edited to put more hair on Chewbacca? Because obviously, famously in the film Splash, they put more hair on Daryl Hannah. Have they removed some of all of the Wookiee's hair? Or the
I'll report
hair?
Back. I'll report yeah. back.
They, sure. They've made all kinds of changes, haven't they? They changed like the various actors playing various ghosts at different points, and they do all kinds of edits because George Lucas has sort of gone mad.
I think they might have made Yoda CGI, and they also made some mess up with Jabba the Hutt at one point as well, because George Lucas kept tinkering, didn't he?
Mm. Yeah. He's like Kevin Shields with Loveless.
Well, Jim, over the weekend you were pouring through the project restart plans, of course, that the Premier League is undertaking. Yeah, they're going to be
didn't understand a word.
No, but neutral stadiums were two words that stuck out for you. Brighton's chief executive, Paul Barber, has said they're opposed to this. And I did find this rather amusing because neutral grounds is what we bandaged about. You know, between 8 and 10 grounds, they think is probably a better idea for safety. And as I say, Brighton's chief exec, Paul Barber, said, no, we're opposed to this. And then it came out that Brighton's ground is reportedly one of the grounds that the Prem are considering. And Barber said he was unaware of this. And I thought to myself, was he like kicking off on the Zoom chat that they were reportedly having? And someone just went, your ground's one of them.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? Well, you know what I think about that. Well, yeah, I quite like how Brighton seem to have stepped up as a sort of like shop steward kind of figure. Among the Premier League clubs, they're one of the only ones who are actually sort of, you know, kind of being quite vocal about what's going on, aren't they? But I also read a piece yesterday saying that the behind closed doors thing is something that not, and that particularly the neutral venues idea based around that is something that a lot of clubs aren't particularly interested in, because the clubs down the bottom obviously feel like they're at a huge disadvantage if they're fighting against relegation, but also you know, in these neutral venues with no fans. And on one hand, it's like, well, it sort of has to be like that. But on the other hand, I kind of understand it, that they are put in a very, very difficult position. So there's been some pushback from what I read yesterday, where those clubs want the idea, are more open to the idea, certainly, if the idea of relegation is removed. And clubs themselves now seem to be talking about things like, hey, well, why not make the Premier League bigger next season? So, I mean, Jamie O'Hara was laughed out of town for suggesting that on Sky Sports News a little while ago. I don't know why he was the only person they could get thinking about it. But it's not like any of the other decent pundits are busy, is it? But still, this idea seems to have popped up again. And I think this is what's going to keep happening, isn't it? Until we have a clearer idea of when it's safe for things to resume, we're just going to go through these cycles of potential solutions, because we are effectively just in a situation where we don't know when things are going to start again.
Are you saying, Jim, that Jamie O'Hara is once again unwelcomely, if that indeed is a word, it isn't, pouring cold or ice water over something, and that something is not enjoying it? Isn't that what he did on his manager?
I'm just pointing out something that happened, and if it has a parallel with something else, then I suppose that is what I'm doing, Pete, yes.
So you've been to court before, Jim, haven't you?
I have, actually. I was taking minutes in a temp job I did. It was horrible.
A temp job? In a court?
Yeah,
obviously
it was weird.
What kind of crimes?
It was family court. I probably can't talk about it.
Judge Judy.
It was very unpleasant. Although, actually, the judge looked and sounded a lot like Anne Robinson, and the barristers on both sides in their closing statements. And it was a family court, so this was about whether a family would have access to their child over Christmas effectively or not. They were saying things like, Your Honor, we take your points of view that such and such is the weakest link in the argument. It's like, oh my God. And they're all like back slapping and laughing about it with the family in the court.
How has this never come up before?
So yeah, I have been to court. It was absolutely outrageous.
Jim, I've seen you use computers and stuff, and invariably they end up on fire. I wouldn't trust you to keep data.
I know, mate.
Safe and secure.
Well, yeah. Most of my minutes were about that, to be fair, as well, which was ultimately irrelevant to the company that had hired me.
Oh, wow. Well, I didn't expect to hear that, Jim. That's the thing. You never know with Jim Campbell.
Well, I didn't expect you to once be a bacon delivery boy, so we're learning a lot about ourselves, aren't we, during the lockdown?
Wait till you hear the time about me being an astronaut. It'll blow your mind.
Pete, you were a zookeeper, weren't you? Except you actually were.
Yeah, something like that.
No, because I can... I can give you clarification on that. Pete was once paid £50 a week for a year to make an interactive DVD about Twycross Cross Zoo and never did it. That's what he did.
wasn't a DVD, it was a CD-ROM.
Sorry, a CD-ROM.
Did you have to give the money back?
Have some respect for the 650 megabyte limit, please.
Sorry, mate.
Blimey. Did you have to give the money back, Pete?
No, I bloody didn't. It was a pittance at a time where all of my friends and colleagues were on a lot more than me for a year. But then I did manage to talk them down to 3 days a week. And in the end, yes, I committed fraud. But no, we moved very quickly to the internet age and we don't use CD-ROMs anymore. So who was the visionary? It was me.
Well,
a lazy visionary.
They're always so often they're lazy, aren't they, visionaries?
Yeah. But yeah, the path of least resistance. And you're basically Gandhi, aren't you, Pete?
I am a little bit, yeah. I am a little bit.
Well, where's Pete? He's watching the chimps again.
Yeah. Pete, it sounds like you'll be seeing Jim in court. If they pick it up again. Luke, do you like the idea that the clubs down the bottom end of the Premier League have said, we'll definitely be up for playing games, you know, neutral grounds. Yeah, absolutely. If you take relegation off the table.
There's no peril.
Not really. Yeah. I'm fed up of ideas now, to be honest. Okay. There's too many of them. People are just saying them all the time.
We need an idea, though, don't we?
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I am in favour. I've come full circle, really. When this first all started, it looked to me like the cleanest and easiest way, and as I keep saying, as people will probably get annoyed with me, keep saying, the least unfair way would just be to null and void the season and not dish out relegation or league titles or anything like that. I think we all agree on this because we've talked about it before, and I hope I'm not putting words in your guys' mouth, but I think we all agree that no matter how far clear they are at the top of the table, awarding PSG the title before they've won it is ridiculous and should never have happened. And, and I feel the same about the Premier League as well. I think it's unfortunate of how good Liverpool have been. But to me, those who are in favour in saying, oh, why is next season, hasn't even started yet, more important than this season that's 75% done? Well, that misses the point. It entirely misses the point. The situation could continue for years and years, us trying to chase our tails and get this sorted out, if we overrun and overrun and overrun on something that really, in the grand scheme of things, isn't actually that important compared to what's been going on in wider society. So I would be in favour of probably, if we can't get it done within a time frame, to completely null and void it and move on, start again as soon as it's safe to do so. That would be my take on it. But having said that, I mean, I was just being flippant at the top of my point about ideas. I'm obviously open to lots of different ways of trying to resolve it as best as possible, and I get that this might be one of them, but I can't muster any enthusiasm for a method that finishes the season in October or November, because it throws us all out of sync, and I just don't think it's necessary to do that. I think we can probably start again and say, look, it is what it is. It's a wider issue. It's a worldwide pandemic. It's unprecedented, and we weren't able to complete the season and move on in that way. That would be my current favoured option. But of course, as the information changes, you have to kind of change your stance a little bit. But that's where I am for now.
But Luke, when you say it's thrown everybody out, will throw us out of sync. Absolutely. But the Qatar World Cup will throw us out of sync as well.
Yeah.
Well, I don't agree with that either.
It's a fair point. Yeah.
I can't. This is the thing, right? So this is what happens all the time with football at the moment. People, every time you make a point, if you do any kind of football broadcasting, you make a point of view, you just get chucked a load of whataboutery. Is it whataboutery or whataboutery?
Yeah, whataboutery.
Whataboutery, straight back at you. Oh, well, you don't like the Saudi takeover of Newcastle. What about Man City? Well, I don't really agree with that either. Well, you don't like this. What about the Qatar World Cup? You can't just keep saying other things have happened that are bad, so therefore we should turn a blind eye to new bad things. I don't agree with the Qatar World Cup either. So I can't use that to inform my opinion about us making another what I believe would be a bad decision.
Still going to watch it, aren't you? Still going to watch it?
Still going to get an Amazon watch it, aren't you? Yeah. Still going to have cameras, aren't they? Yeah. We're still going to be talking about it, aren't you?
Stop having an opinion because you're going to watch it.
Has this recording session been hacked?
But I think, though, the thing is with the Qatar World Cup, I completely agree with what you're saying. But because, I mean, you'd be a very brave person to factor that into the scheduling of sort of next season and the season after and so on. But there's been a few suggestions there. But I think that makes it an even more tangled web kind of a situation, really.
Do you think that looking at the all of the maniacs in Parliament Square at the weekend, sort of shouting at the government to open up the country again, and that, do you think that there is a public kind of order aspect to this as well, and football and sport in general coming back? I've said this before on the podcast, I'm sure. Sport and football coming back is part of a healing process, does return some kind of normalcy to proceedings, and does help people to get back on their feet a little bit. So that there is that aspect to it. I realise it's all going to come down to governmental advice, but I do also think that maybe move the season a little earlier by a couple of weeks, just to kind of help us get back on our feet
But the other thing,
Pete,
the other thing that's got to be factored in for sure is the idea of what the players want to do. And we talked about this late last week. And I'm fairly certain Marcus, not to steal his thunder, is going to come in and talk about one of Gary Neville's ideas about moving the football overseas. And, you know, I respect the idea that Gary Neville's putting forward all these suggestions. And I think what Gary, I don't know him, I never met him, but based on what he said and reading between the lines, I think what he's doing is trying to show a little bit of leadership, because I don't think he thinks that leadership has been present. And I respect him using his platform to do that. So I'm not going to criticise him just for chucking ideas out there. But I mean, what I would say is his most recent one is mental. Absolutely mental.
And I think
it bears repeating.
Yeah.
It does.
I mean, he has put himself, as you say, Luke, he's put himself out there, and he's been criticising the lack of leadership, hasn't he? But, you know, the leagues and the clubs as well, they can only really follow the guidelines that they're being given. So it is difficult for them to come out and say that they're definitely going to do X or Y. But at the same time, I suppose he's being put on the spot and asked stuff from his living room with his really, really big pot of fake white branches in it. So it's... can you see that?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Very strange. It's like a sort of Narnia thing.
A person's home is surely they're able to do what they want to do with it, right? I mean, Jim, you just talked to us before we started about what's in your room at the moment, and it sounded quite mental as well. So each to their own,
I'd
say.
Fair. Actually, it's very fair.
You were talking about a giant whiteboard taking up all the space.
Yeah, it's not a giant whiteboard. It's just a normal whiteboard.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It depends on your viewpoint, I suppose.
What do you write on there? You're like your daily formation? What's going on?
I've got a to-do list, and I've also got a little note that says things take longer than you think they will. I like that. Just a little reminder.
Nice, I like it.
Jim, have you got a list of countries that the Premier League could be played in if they do go abroad, like Gary Neville suggests?
I haven't, Marcus, but I do have room for that.
The thing is, so we talked last week or the week before about the idea that players that come back go to these... places for 4 weeks, be isolated from their families. And we talked about the idea of, just to give people a reminder, the fact that childcare is going to be difficult for families at the moment. Footballers are very much a part of that. And a lot of them have come out and said, no, it's not really realistic for this reason, that reason, the other reason. And then Gary Neville says, would you like to go to Western Australia?
No, to be fair to Gary Neville, he actually didn't. I don't think he said Australia. He said that matches could go abroad. And there's an English agent called Gary Williams who lives in Perth, Australia, who's been in contact with government authorities and Premier League clubs about the idea of holding it in Western Australia. And the Perth senator, Glenn Stirl, or Stirlo, as I'm sure he's called out.
He's called Glenn. Amazing.
has come out in support of the idea. But I like the thought of this guy, Gary Williams, just constantly bombarding the Premier League, going, well, you can still come out to Western Australia, and them going, not now, Gary. Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember when AC/DC went on tour in South America, because they figured out that instead of getting all Metallica on everyone's arses and getting angry about Napster, they actually analysed where all of their music was getting torrented. So just find the place where no one likes Premier League football and just go there, as long as
there
they don't
no
have
place,
quite
though.
As many.
That's the problem.
Well, New Zealand have very low COVID cases, Scotland.
Yeah, but therefore New Zealand won't want all the Premier League turning up, will they?
Exactly.
Can I also say, my point still stands. The fact that a lot of players said we don't want to be away from our families for 4 weeks in St George's Park, which is in the Midlands, means they're probably not going to want to go to New Zealand.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Which government officials has he spoke to?
It just reminds me of that Father Ted sketch. You know, the Midlands is close. New Zealand is very far away.
I would say that on shortfootbarometerdaily.com, how you can get involved with the email chat, we don't need any more plans from everyone. We have about 10 every single. And you will have noticed that I've never read any of them out because they're both either pretty much the same, madder than what anything I could come up with, and so I don't end up reading them out. So don't worry about it, guys. We don't know what's going to happen. The football authorities clearly don't know what's going to happen, so let's just relax, all right, yeah?
Everybody calm down, for crying out loud. Well, according to reports, Premier League players might be interviewed at half-time and cameras could be placed in the dressing rooms as a part of
least
the league's
of our
plans.
Problems.
Yep, the part of the league's plans to revamp broadcasting Project Restart. I mean, if that doesn't substitute thousands of fans going to the ground, I don't know what does.
That fascinates me.
No, can I just say, you guys sound exasperated by that. I quite like that idea. I think, you know, what's really interesting to me is that no one that I have spoken to out of my friends who are big football fans have really let it sink in yet that we're not going to see crowds or feel or hear crowds at football matches for a very long time. And that's going to change football in a huge way. Anyone who's watched Sky Sports on a Friday night when they occasionally show Wigan as part of their Friday night football will know that watching football without fans is a bit rubbish, right? So they have to innovate to show more interest in the broadcasting. And I actually think that's a good idea. I think, you know, when you see an FA Cup game and they have a Premier League team versus a non-league team or whatever, they sometimes patronise the non-league manager by interviewing them at half-time and stuff. But it is insightful. I think it's a good idea.
It is, but the danger is that it becomes here to stay, doesn't it? And then you've got a broadcaster distracting one or both of the teams during half-time in a period where they're supposed to be taking a team talk or whatever. And I think any sort of encroachment by the broadcaster on the actual sport itself is frustrating. And I think the danger is that becomes the norm, because quite often these things aren't rode back on, are they?
But the thing is, fair enough, I do respect that viewpoint, but I would just counter it by saying that football has taken a lot of money from broadcasting, and none of that really has been passed on to the fans in any capacity at all. So the chance that broadcast could do something that could offer a genuine bit of insight to fans and make it more entertaining and more interesting for them, particularly at a time when fans can't go and watch footballers play, I think would be a good thing. I don't realistically think, and nor does anyone, that they're going to show the actual team talks, but cameras in the dressing room would be interesting. There's already a precedent for that anyway, because if you want to pay $100,000 or whatever it is, you can watch the players walking through the tunnel at Man City and Spurs that I know of. So I think if it can be done in a way that doesn't completely compromise the integrity of the competition, of course, then I think it's a good thing. I don't necessarily think it's something that should be seen as a negative personally, because in times of hardship come times of great innovation, and I don't think sport or entertainment or whatever should necessarily be immune from that. I realise that people have not seen any innovation from us at Football Ramble Daily, and I apologise for that.
You've got clubs all right.
Yeah, thank you, mate.
What the hell? Well, apparently the FA Cup could be scheduled for the 5th or the 8th of August under
that's
the Project Restart plans. Exactly.
That's the one we're waiting for. That's the one, the Newcastle Man City match. Come on.
Yes, Newcastle have still got a chance.
Well, they were talking about giving it to the team who were still in the competition and had the most goals, which, thanks to Newcastle being unable to beat lower league opposition, had a lot of replays. So they would have won the thing.
Oh, wow.
Probably would have gone for that one.
And that's in a nutshell why that should absolutely not happen. Oh, we've got a lot of replays against lower league opposition, so we deserve to win it.
Null and void. Hand it out, Gordon Bennett.
Why do you think there's a desperation, for example, for something like, I mean, Marcus, I'll just throw this back at you. For something like the FA Cup, why is there a desperation, it seems come what may, to finish this competition and give someone an FA Cup trophy in August? When you think about it, for the biggest one of the biggest attractions of the FA Cup is the fact that most teams of a certain level can enter it, and it's done throughout the season. By the time August comes around, everything being well, the FA Cup's new season should have started anyway. So it remains to be seen how it's going to be sorted next season if the final's not going to be done till August or whatever. They can't start the new FA Cup, can they? So why is there a desperation? Why don't they just, Marcus? Tell me why they don't just get rid of it
for the bants.
Fair enough. Pete,
yeah, but I'll throw it to Pete. Yeah, but do you not think that? I mean, there's no lower league opposition. There's no non-league opposition in the FA Cup right now, so they could effectively overlap if they really, really needed to. I mean, you know, there's no kind of like there's no instruction from heaven that says a competition has to be finished before the next one starts. I mean, that does happen around the world.
That would be insane, though. By the way, that would be fine. I think so, because if it gets pushed back and pushed back, I mean, all of a sudden we're playing on Wednesday in the semi-final of last year's one, and then we've got the first round proper or the third round the week on Tuesday. It's mad.
The Scottish League Cup finishes in August, like last year, doesn't it? Every year it seems to get earlier and earlier.
I refer you to my previous point earlier in the show. I don't agree with that either.
Well, I'll tell you, the reason why they want to finish the FA Cup is because if they want to pick up the season and finish it, Newcastle haven't won a domestic trophy since the mid-50s. You know, they probably think, well, everyone should have a chance to compete in the competition and so on and so forth. That's why.
I do think that once we start picking at the seams of football, it's the very fibres of it, you just sort of think, football is absurd anyway. So let's just relax about making it more absurd.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to pull on the thread of why exactly does this have to happen? Does this matter? I don't know. You know, I don't know if this matters.
We'll get out of a job.
I understand that the point about the FA Cup, you sort of make it null and void. You know, what's the point? I suppose if you then start taking into account, oh, but they haven't won it for a while, or there's no non-league opposition in it, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of like, no. You are the player.
They're not going to beat Man City. Don't worry about it.
we might never know, Peter, but Newcastle United, with all the chat of the prospective new owners of Newcastle lining up Pochettino or somebody else to replace Steve Bruce, the players apparently have come out in support of Big Steve. They are going to stand up and be counted for old Brucey. According to sources, they are in favour of Steve Bruce staying and are going to do all they can to keep old Brucey baby at the club, even if that means finishing in the top four. They're going to do it for Brucey.
I imagine that the players are probably working harder under lockdown than they do on the training field.
Yeah, they can't believe their luck. I don't want this to end. I also love the idea of Steve Bruce with a blank cheque. How ambitious would he be? So, oh, maybe I'll try and get that Mikel Antonio or Ashley Barnes or maybe even Shane Long.
To be fair, the first two would be good signings, Jim.
With a blank cheque? With a blank check, Marcus?
Also, to be fair, like if anyone who's ever had a job will know that if you've got a boss who lets you do whatever you want and there's rumours that he's going and a new one's coming in and he's got a reputation for high achievement, in quotes, it's the last thing you want.
Absolutely. You want David, not Neil.
100%.
Well, I found this quite interesting, this piece of news, that there's a consortium apparently consisting of Henrik Larsson, Philip Cocu, Dirk Kuyt, Dennis Bergkamp and Ronald Koeman, and they're planning on buying an English football club. Now, the agent, Rob Janssen, is heading up the project, and they said that they recently, whichever wording you prefer, had a deal with a club that Janssen wouldn't name, but they were beaten by a foreign investor. And I thought, surely
not. Is this next week's film club?
some sort of football-themed Avengers.
Yeah, beaten by a foreign investor. I mean, obviously the deal hasn't been done, but could they have been in charge of a northeastern football club in England? Who knows?
Maybe Bergkamp would have a statue of himself mugging off Nicholas de Bitsas.
What I would say, by the way, is that that is an amazing undertaking of a huge amount of travel for Dennis Bergkamp.
It is. It certainly is. Well, I thought to myself, you could imagine the five of them sat around and going, yeah, we've got the deal, that's brilliant. And Koeman going, I'll probably be manager, won't I? And Philip Cocker going, well, actually, we do need to talk about that, because I thought, you know, me and this massive argument breaking out. We should say, though, at the time of recording, that Koeman apparently has had a heart procedure recently after experiencing chest pains. It sounds like he'll be okay, though. So all the best to Ronald. But yes, I would the five of them taking over an English side. I would imagine it would be a lower English side, of course, but it'd be interesting.
Can I dream that Dennis is coming to save the day at Arsenal and rid us from Stan Kroenke?
Because unlikely.
The new stadium for the St. Louis Rams, or the LA Rams as they're called now, is apparently like running into the billions. Maybe he needs to free up some cash. Please sell us, Stan. Please just sell us the Pittsburgh camp. Please. Just please.
The interesting thing about it is that it might mean that Philip Cocu doesn't think he's going to be at Derby County for much longer. Yeah. I mean, because
it's a bit of a conflict of interest, isn't it?
I would say so. Yeah, it's kind of this is the natural conclusion of football, isn't it? We've now got to a point. Now I understand that there's going to be other investors here, and these guys are probably just the figureheads of it. But I mean, it's happened. There's a little bit of a precedent with Salford, isn't there? It's got to the point now where the game is paying top footballers so much that they're now able to almost own clubs. I mean, David Beckham's done the same thing in Miami. But if Salford get up the Football League and start playing against teams that one of these guys perhaps is managing at some point, because you know Gary Neville's managed, Ryan Giggs is managing, I mean, it could be a ridiculous situation that football would need to do something about. So not to put pour cold water on it, because the idea is amazing, it does seem a little bit odd.
Yeah, I think the natural progression from that as well is in sort of like maybe 20, 30 years, the only people that can afford to attend games will be ex-footballers. So you look around the crowd and
because they were behind closed doors
glittering.
Still, weren't they?
Yeah.
Actually, guys, now when you're talking about pouring cold water on something, I've just realised I've confused Jeremy O'Hara with David Bentley.
Right. I was grasping for what you meant.
He did, over Harry Redknapp.
Yeah, and you just let me get away with it every time, and I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah,
it was your birthday weekend.
Pete, it's a high percentage of things, and I'll speak on behalf of you and Marcus here if they don't mind. It's a high percentage of things that we just simply do not know what you're talking about, so we just let you get on with it.
I'm playing 4D chess, guys. Yeah. I'm trumping it.
Yeah.
It wasn't even Pete's birthday weekend, so there we are.
No, it was just Tisky Day.
Disky day. Every day is Disky day.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go for a quick break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We could call it Pete and Mark's Colossal Tussle.
But we didn't. We called it Wrestle Me. Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
A celebration of all things WrestleMania and beyond. And you may be thinking, I'm not really into wrestling. Well, don't worry. There's something for everyone. To be honest, it's mainly about stuff like this.
So hang on. Easy Lover was the original theme on WrestleMania.
It was. Someone heard it on the radio and went, that sums up everything about WrestleMania to me.
And
And this. You can really see the old back acne on test.
Yes.
And this.
Is it worth reminding people of what earthquake John Tenter looked like at 23 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
This.
For the record, Marty has made it very clear, and I agree and believe him, that he has never, A, had sex with his daughter, or B, wanted to have sex with his daughter.
And the people behind the face paint doing the most unique job in the entire world. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily, everybody. Luke.
Sponsored by Tiscate.
Right.
Not sponsored by Tisky, although this Sunday...
Come on, guys. Come and get
Sunday,
me.
Sees another edition of the Football Ramble Daily Book Club with Andy Brassel, Kate Mason and myself. This week, we'll be talking about Building the Yellow Wall by Uli Hess, a book on the history and global appeal of Borussia Dortmund, and we'd love you to join us. There's still just about enough time to get a copy of the book and read it before Sunday's show, so grab one from a reputable bookseller and let us know what you think of it over on our Instagram, at Football Ramble Daily, or Twitter at Football Ramble. Last episode of the book club was released on Sunday 19th of April and featured Duncan Hamilton's opus about Brian Clough, Provided You Don't Kiss Me. If you haven't heard that yet, grab yourself an ice cold Tisky from the fridge, pop it open and give it a listen.
Do you drink and read?
Get caught.
I tend not to drink and read.
Have a beer or a glass of wine, nothing more than that.
I hear about, like, yeah, I hear a lot, like, a lot of people on podcasts and radio shows where they talk about going to a pub and reading a book. It's like, after the first beer, like, you just get distracted, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
By what a brilliant what time you're having. Just you're having a brilliant time, Marcus. All of your inhibitions have gone. Everything you say is really, really funny.
You consider starting fights, making love.
Yeah, you start a band.
I've got a mate, by the way, who's a good friend of mine, who started a band. Yeah, is that sort of kind of noise while you haven't got one, whoever that was.
Lockdown, mate!
Who started five-a-side teams, bands, book clubs, all sorts in the local pub, and none of them ever had anything to do. Yeah. None of them ever had anything.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to start bands all the time, to the point where he saw a guy who was drumming on some buckets in Oxford Street, and he put his number on a little note and put it in the guy's bucket. It's like, mate, he's not going to call you and start a band with you.
Jim, put on the whiteboard, start a band.
It's on there, mate. It's on there.
Things that take longer than you think. Right, it's now time for emails with PTD.
It is Staff Emails with me. If you want to get in touch with the show, it is, as always, short at footballrambledaily.com. You just heard the jingle. Why not get involved? Oliver Hogburn says, more on pards is the subject line. Oi, oi, gents. First time email. I love the show. Oh, stop it. I heard a fun fact to get you chuckling about good old pards. Alan Pardew to his enemies from a friend over the weekend. His last three wins have come in three separate years, with a year in between them too, if it couldn't get any better. 2016, 2018 and 2020 with Palace, West Brom and obviously Den Haag in 2020. Who will he be managing for his next win in 2022? Place your bets. All the best, Oliver Hogman. Wonderful. Oliver Bailey, friend of the show? I guess he again. Barry Davies, you're talking
memories.
About...
That's memories.
Yeah. That's memories, yeah. Memories, you must know memories, cat. Barry Davies, porno commentary is the title of this subject email. Did I dream it, or did you recently speculate on whether Barry Basher D. Davies could effectively moonlight as a commentator for pornography? If you ask me, some of his existing commentaries already work rather well in this regard. Here are my top five Barry Davies commentaries that conjure up images of hardcore erotica. Number five, where were the Germans? And frankly, who cares? Number four, that is schoolboy's own stuff. I bet even he can't believe it. Is there anything left from this man to surprise us? Number three, a test of his pace, now a test of his finish, and he's equal to both. Number two, it's up for grabs now. And finally, number one, interesting. Interesting. Very interesting. Look at his face. Yeah. Just look at his face.
I knew that was coming, to speak.
Yeah, you knew that was coming. Oliver Bailey, fantastic work.
Excellent.
Carsten says, has there ever been a one-manager man in American football as a player? Owen Daniels, who's played for four different teams, but only one coach. Gary Kubiak, which is a fantastic name. Just followed him from team to team. Are there any footballers who've played for multiple clubs, but only one manager? I'm thinking it's probably like the son of the manager. I'm thinking
the Alex Bruce type.
Bruce's offspring. Yeah, that kind
of thing. Nico Cruncher. Just Harry Redknapp.
there's also one with, I think, Dion Burton, if those of you remember him, a striker from mostly in the early 2000s. He played a lot under the late, great Jim Smith, God rest him, at lots of different clubs. I'm not really sure. I mean, maybe he just thought he could trust him and he thought he could rely on him. But he famously followed Jim Smith in a lot of different places. So I don't think, obviously, exclusively just for one manager was a little bit far-fetched. But I mean, Kranjčar and Redknapp is the all time classic, isn't it?
Well, it's a much maligned that kind of behaviour. But I mean, if you trust a player, if you know exactly what that player can do, it's the best situation. Like,
Pete, I think there's been a suggestion that the reason that the Redknapp Kranjčar one happened may not have been for that reason. And I'll tell you about what that is after the show.
Yes, absolutely. But a better example would be Jermaine Defoe and Harry Redknapp. Defoe said recently that he felt Redknapp was like a father figure and so on and so forth.
Right, okay.
Also, Maurizio Sarri even tried to sign Jorginho for Juventus, didn't he, when he went there? So he likes to have Jorginho because he's exactly that player that he trusts. Actually, I learned something recently. Did you guys know that Maurizio Sarri is a literal translation of Smokey Morris?
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Bluesman.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
No one said determinism. Love it.
Yeah.
Well, I think some of the names you don't realise. I think John Travolta, I think I asked James Horncastle about this and he said, nearly. If you put in Travolta to like a basic Google Translate, I think it's, I forget which one, I think it's overwhelmed. So it's like John overwhelmed, but very sort of loosely, very, I mean, it's not, I'm sure an Italian would say, but you're not far off it. So just enjoy
it. Wickedly talented.
Exactly.
Martin Conway's got an email to clear up the naming of Neville Neville. We've just been talking about names. Hi, chaps. In contrast to your explanation on the previous show last week, I have it on family authority that the reason Neville Neville has such a wonderful moniker is not because of laziness, but due in fact to his dad being a big horse racing fan. I don't know why I went big on the word horse there. I'm not saying that Neville Neville's dad was a big horse. He wasn't. He's a big horse racing
Neville.
Fan on Boy Jack Neville. On the day his son was born, he got a hot tip and had a flutter on a horse called The Last Shall Be the First and the First Shall Be the Last from Matthew 2016.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you guys know, or at least one of us do. Although I'm sure if that is related. After it came in as a winner, he saw this as a sign that he had his name, his son, as such. Ridiculous, but not lazy. Keep up the great work, Martin. I would go with that explanation.
Yeah, lazy doesn't seem to be something that fits the Neville family, does it?
No.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Is there a recent piece where Phil Neville was talking about when he used to play for Everton and Gary Neville used to play for Manchester United and Gary Neville used to ham it up massively for the cameras? I was reading that over the weekend. Fascinating dynamic. Like Gary not wanting to shake hands with his brother and stuff and being a bellend.
Do you not remember when... They were both on Sky Sports once, and it was Gary Neville punditing in the studio, and Phil Neville was pitch side or something, and they introduced themselves, and it was just the weirdest thing. They might have been joking, to be fair, but Phil Neville went, "Evening, Gary," and Gary went, "Evening, Philip," and they just carried on. It was like the strangest thing.
That's how we should start. Actually, I think that's exactly how we start every podcast. Yeah,
we're clear. Yeah. Crucially, we're not brothers.
Exactly. Brothers in arms, I say. shortfootballrambledaily.com. Get involved.
Beautiful.
Did you guys see this thing that popped up on the Daily Mail website about Matt Ritchie and John Joe Shelby? It's so funny. Like, so essentially, the article starts with Matt Ritchie, and the headline stuff starts with Matt Ritchie essentially bigging up John Joe Shelby, saying he's a player who's got everything, he can do it all, and you know, he's incredulous that he's only been capped six times for England. But what essentially Matt Ritchie is saying, it becomes clear as you read through the article, is that Matt Ritchie thinks John Joe Shelby would be a much better player if he wasn't fucking mental. And he says,
and that's coming from Matt Ritchie.
Yeah, I know. I've said this to his face. If only his head was screwed on and he focused on football and stopped playing golf all the time, he could play for Barcelona. It's like, okay, thanks very much for that. Appreciate it. I mean, what a backhanded compliment if ever I've heard one.
He knows he's not allowed to get at him, though. He knows he's got a couple of weeks grace before Shelby
can't get near me in training. Yeah.
I do find that interesting, though, because that idea of, like, if he focused and got his head right and concentrated on football, like, presumably, like, he goes to every training session. Like, what's he doing there to give people this impression? Is he bringing his clubs?
So the latest thinking is, as far as I know, and this might be part of the reason why Gareth Bale, only part of the reason, I should say, why Gareth Bale's been getting a bit of stick, is because the miles they put on the golf course and the movement and the pressures it puts on parts of the body, I don't think if you're playing it competitive, it's actually a very good idea for a footballer. And apparently Jonjo Shelvey insists on playing three times a week every week. And they're saying that, you know, for your mental headspace, for your physical well-being and stuff, you shouldn't really be doing that. And it's been seen as a traditional way for footballers to relax for obviously decades and decades. And so I think these days maybe they can't get away with it as much as perhaps they could in the past. And so Gareth Bale's another one, isn't he? He just plays golf all the time, apparently. So maybe that's got something to do with it.
Oh, interesting. Did you see that Cristiano Ronaldo bought his mum a brand new Mercedes 4? And I quote, as the Daily Mail said, we go down Daily Mail Avenue quite a lot.
What's happened there?
Yeah.
Lockdown's killed us.
I know, right?
I want to distance myself from that. I've not been reading it.
My dad sends me a lot of Daily Mail links. I just like the fact that they've titled it, Cristiano Ronaldo treats his mother to a new Mercedes as Juventus star wishes his two special women a happy Portuguese Mother's Day. I just love that they have to put in the fact that it's Portuguese Mother's Day. Yeah,
that sounds so euphemistic. Sounds like the day that you get whacked.
Happy Portuguese Mother's Day.
Yeah. It's not a Dutch Mother's Day.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, we all understand that different countries have different Mother's Day, but I just like the fact that the Daily Mail had to make it very clear that the Portuguese have a very different Mother's Day than we do.
Yeah, it's also the same in the US. The US Mother's Day is different as well, because my wife always has to
I get very confused.
Yeah, it's different all the way around the world for some reason. I'm not sure why. And also, I think in Vietnam, they don't have a Mother's Day. They have like a Women's Day, and it's traditional to present presents and flowers and cards to all the women in your life, not just your mother. So it does vary around the world.
On Valentine's Day in Japan, women have to give men presents and chocolates and stuff. And then there's White Day a month later. because then I would have to... Oh, yeah, no, I would receive presents. Yeah, sorry, yeah. That's why I go there. For
you
chocolates.
Okay, mate?
From your secret.
Yeah, just worrying about Mother's Day.
Portuguese Mother's Day. You've not upset anyone, have you?
I think it was Mother's Day in Poland over the weekend. So maybe the Portuguese and the Polish, they're sharing a Mother's Day. Probably other countries
maybe.
As well.
Confusing.
Let's get in line.
Can we just get everything together? Let's get rid of all of daylight savings time. Let's just, you know, understand that agriculture isn't quite as important anymore. Mothers, just everyone get together and just have one big Mother's Day. Like Christmas.
No, I don't want to lose my freedom, Peter.
Okay? Cool.
Don't step on Marcus, Pete.
I won't. I shan't.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for Pete's Film Club.
Pete's Film Club.
Yes, it's time for my film club. You thought you'd heard quite enough of me, but I've brought you 3 hours of Dan Gall in a last-ditch effort to save his ground. The jaded coach of the Southall United Football Club assembles a ragtag team and helps lead them to a comeback season. And this is what it sounds like.
That's what I want you to be doing.
Oh, he's got his speed.
But that's what this team needs.
Good strike, Sonny.
Who's he?
Sonny. Indian boy.
Your boyfriend?
No.
Good work, guys.
All right. Want to go to the pub and catch a 5:30 game?
Hi.
Hi.
He's Tony, Sonny. Tumhe pata hai? Tony was the best we ever had. Aur wo hamare coach hai.
Mubarak ho.
Guys, what did you reckon of this one? It was a long one, but I thought it was a good one. In parts. I can't say in parts enough.
Would you want me to jump in first?
Yeah, go on, Loki.
Okay, so it was really, really long. That's part number one. I felt like it went on for such a long time. I watched this on a Saturday afternoon, and it really did feel like it dominated my day.
Right.
Because I was building up to the idea of watching a almost 3-hour film that I didn't really want to watch, and then watching said film, which felt even longer. But what I would say is, one thing that's coming up time and time again on Pete's Film Club is our assessment of the football scenes within it. And the football scenes themselves weren't actually too bad. Some of the actors and a lot of the extras could clearly play. And so from a non-league point of view, it actually looked okay. But the one thing I did find really difficult to get on board with was that they had clearly set up an environment and built a world where football was just completely different. So the team names were different, with the odd exception, which I'm sure we'll come on to.
Gatwick United,
and it was kind of interesting to try and get on board with that. And the graphics were kind of a bit odd in places as well. But I did absolutely love it. I know Jim's going to hammer me for this, but as you guys know, and maybe our listeners don't know as well, I quite like musicals. I quite like musical films, like Oliver, for example, is one of my favourite films. So I really loved the music in the middle, and I wish there'd been more songs because to me that's more interesting than some of the frankly quite bad acting.
Well, culturally, Luke, like Indian films, there's just a lot more in there. And like a 90-minute film is regarded as being quite short. They call it the masala because they mix everything in. They mix romance, drama, comedy, music, action, everything in there. And going to the cinema is a bit more social.
Pete, that's why I was actually going to... My final point was going to be, it's very interesting you say that, because for me, it definitely felt like... obviously coming from a background that I come from where you watch obviously Western movies, they have very specific genres about the type of film they are 99% of the time. Whereas this one was, it wasn't really a sports film. It wasn't really a romance. It wasn't really a kind of crime drama, but it was all of those things kind of chucked together, which I think is really fascinating, chiefly because my sensibilities aren't set up to deal with that. So I couldn't really pigeonhole it in my mind, but I can't say I didn't, I did enjoy it to an extent, but I thought some of the scenes were just ridiculous, and it was way, way too long for my, frankly, addled and poor attention span brain.
What do you reckon, Jim?
I'm certainly, I'm not going to hammer you for liking musicals, Luke, to each their own. But I would say what was interesting about it was seeing a movie from the point of view of the South Asian community in London. That was actually quite an interesting world. I was glad to sort of spend the time in. But it was quite jarring, isn't it, to Western eyes, really, because the dubbing and the melodrama of the dubbing's mad. Like all of the dialogue is dubbed and kind of quite clunkily so, and everything's very melodramatic. And one of the things I found quite difficult about it was the way that the lens through which women are seen in it. They were window dressing, or they were somebody who would just nag. Or they were utterly forgiving of completely awful behaviour in a lot of cases, and there was a lot of casual sexism from the dialogue in the main characters too. To the point where they went to Brighton Beach for a team bonding exercise, just met loads of women hanging out on the beach in bikinis on a gloomy day. Went to the pub with them, and they were just still in their bikinis. It was all very odd.
You used to live in Brighton, you know that's absolutely true to London.
Well, I'd never seen any of those women in Brighton, so I don't remember that, but there was the internal logic of the movie was a bit wrong as well, because the idea is that this team hadn't won a single game in 25 years.
25
years. They didn't have a kit, and yet the league that they're in had a prize pot of £3 million. Now the idea behind the movie is that this team is going to lose their ground because this guy who's hanging around, who seems to be some sort of king-making deal-breaker, he's also a local like pundit on this sort of local TV station that for some reason has a lot of clout.
And there's a Princess Diana developer kind of character.
Yeah, she works for the council, and she wants to kind of develop the ground, and she keeps saying, shit! That seems to be like her catchphrase.
Can I just say, Jim, all that stuff you pointed out there about them not winning the game, not having a kit, it was still 100% more believable than Soccer Dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it was.
A lot of it was actually, I thought, I mean, you say it's an image in the South Asian community in Britain. I would argue it isn't. It's a Bollywood idea of what the South Asian community in Britain is like.
Of course.
And a lot of what made me giggle was like, because obviously you have to concentrate on the subtitles, and a lot of like in Indian films, they'll switch between Hindi and English to either indicate social class or they'll have subtitles for like the diaspora and kind of second generationers who don't have that much of a handle on the Hindi language. But sometimes in this film, they'll subtitle the English and say something. They'll subtitle when the characters are speaking English with a completely different phrase. So like the character will say, "Oh, that's a little bit below the belt," and in the text it'll say, "She really hits where it hurts." I'm like, that's a completely different phrase. I can't learn anything here.
Marcus, what did you think?
there's a few finer details that I'd like to point out. One of them, which I found very, very amusing, is that they go into a pub at one point, the team, and there's a load of blokes sitting around watching a football match. And it's like blazing sunshine outside for West London. And it's during the day. But the match they're watching the precise moment of the penalty shootout between England and Germany at Euro 96 when Gareth Southgate's penalty is missed. And they all go,
so weird.
Like
that. So
also,
weird.
Marcus, if I may cut in on that, there is some sort of generic kind of background pub shouting while this is happening.
Yes.
Like, shoot, shoot. And one of the lines is, pass the shot.
that's the thing.
Love
the dubbing. Everything is dubbed, even though you can see that person in the scene saying that word. Like, why do you dub? And sometimes
ADR,
they're dubbed with
ADR, maybe, baby.
Sometimes they're dubbed with a slight faux American accent. So, like the physio at this non-league club, like or sort of. I suppose it's set up, so it feels like a non-league club. But as you say, Luke, it's in this sort of weird sort of league where the pot is £3 million.
Yeah, those final scenes were shot at Millwall, weren't they? Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The combined counties league, it's identified as.
Yeah. Well, Southall United are a side. They're a football club. So obviously they've used the club there. But like the physio kind of, you know, he talks to one of the players, and then he, you know, massages him, whatever, and he leans over and goes, I think you're okay now, or something. It's like, where's that voice come from? Like, clearly he doesn't speak with some sort of mid-Atlantic kind of fake accent. I mean, to be honest, I thought some of the characters were quite likable, which we can't say the same for in Hot Shots. So that was quite enjoyable. So it was
or playing for keeps.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some of them were quite likable, as I say. And Luke, you're absolutely right. The guy who's like heralded as the best player in the whole thing is actually a footballer, and some of the football scenes, I thought, actually, so far, these are the best football scenes I think we've had. I'd say maybe
I think
even better
with
than
that.
Even better than Shot of Glory. So that was great. So well,
Marcus,
done.
Would Monty Singh would probably qualify as an England striker? Would you give him a penalty shootout berth? Would you allow him to take one?
I mean, I think that if he was...
He hits them high, doesn't he?
He hit one about 40 yards over the bar.
If he was a rugby man, I'd put him on conversions, definitely. but not penalties in football. But the other thing I found quite strange is, and I think you're absolutely right, Pete, when you say it's a Bollywood version of the South Asian community in this little part of West London, is that when the main character, Sonny, who's the best player, he's playing for a team in the same league who happen to be like all white, they're all white players, and he gets a bit of racist abuse. And then when he's dropped from the team, he becomes sort of apparent or very much assumed that it's because that he's not white. And when he says to the sort of the manager or the chairman, I think it is, why have you not picked me? Why am I not in the squad? They both just sort of look at him. And then he goes, is it because of the colour of my skin? And then they both sort of look at him, and then one of them walks off and shrugs, and the other one goes, you know, well, what can I do, son? It's like, not be a racist prick. That's what you can do. What can I do?
Yeah, because the manager doesn't speak at any point during that exchange. He just gives him a series of knowing looks, and it's really jarring.
Well, the final point I wanted to make was that the reason why I think you're absolutely right, Pete, is because this guy, Sonny, who's like the best player, when he goes and plays for Southall United, who are set up as an all-Asian club. Now, that's not true in real life, but actually the first all-Asian
football club in the country, I believe, was in Southall. So there's a sort of an ounce of a nod to sort of history, if you like, and that sort of thing. It's quite interesting if you read up about the area and its sort of recent history in the last sort of 50, 60 years. But Sonny goes and plays for them, and then he gets signed to Millwall City, who are dubbed as one of the biggest clubs in the country. He's got a lucrative contract. He's earning a good few thousand pounds a week. They've given him a car, a mansion, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's like, well done, mate. You've done really well there. His teammates and the whole community absolutely chastise him as if he's a complete traitor. And I thought to myself, no, I'm pretty sure that that community would be absolutely delighted if one of their own like got to the sort of top level of the sport. And I thought, that's a bit strange, really, isn't it? Anyway.
Yeah, but it was the jeopardy involved, wasn't it, Marcus? Because he was their best player and losing them, which was, you know, part of an underhand shady deal by this weird commentator guy, meant that they were unlikely to win the league, meaning they'd get the £3 million to keep their ground.
Yeah, but they kept saying it's not about football.
But I think you guys are slightly missing the point, though, because it wasn't made that clear in the film, and I only really know this because I read the IMDb entry afterwards, that the reason they're annoyed with him and they're upset with him is because this particular team that he signed for have apparent links to like racist movements and skinhead movements and stuff, and they think of him how can you do that when you've been a victim of racial abuse yourself, and how can you do this to this community? But I concede it wasn't actually made that clear in the film. Perhaps we missed the subtleties of it or something because we're not from that background.
Can I just jump in with one more point? Right at the start of the film, one of the main players for Southall United, his uncle is the manager of the team or the chairman of the team. And he's given this news of you've got to kind of, get £3 million or whatever together to keep the ground and keep the club going. And he's driving him home, and his uncle is sort of going, "Ah, it's terrible. It's a really bad situation." And then his uncle just dies in the car.
Yeah,
and he turns around.
That was weird.
He turns around. I forgot. And he goes, "Yeah." He turns round and he's just like, "Oh, uncle, oh." It's like, how do you know he's just, exactly. It's kind of like, damn it all. Surely the response to that wouldn't just be, he just suddenly stopped. Therefore, all right, he's dead. There's nothing we can do. People would be like, oh shit, is he dead? Get him to the hospital quickly. This guy's just completely resigning to the fact.
His story ends there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, there's a "Don't Mess With Me Here, Dude" banger.
That's
a
brilliant
song
tune. Some of the tunes were really good. Yeah, some of the tunes were brilliant. That one particularly was amazing. I was actually humming that around, so was my wife, for a good while afterwards. But I was going to ask you guys, so we've done quite a few of these now. Can you, just because I'm interested, can you each give me, like, in a word, your favourite and least favourite films so far? So if I start with you, Marcus.
I think something that we can all agree on is that football films are a bit shit. Like, no matter what you do, that's become abundantly clear.
The ones I choose are.
I would say, purely for the fact that it's from a different era, and so therefore expectations are a bit different, blah, 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 blah. I'd say the Arsenal Stadium Mystery would be probably my favourite. But other than that, I'd maybe say the first one we watched, Goal, might be the better one. The worst one, by a country mile, and if anybody has a different worst one than they're a moron, is obviously Soccer Dog European.
I think we can all agree on the worst one. I think that's probably fair. My favourite has probably been... the one with Pele, just because it was just so warm. Yeah. I'd say Hot Shot my favourite one.
Snackable, isn't it?
Yeah, snackable fun, man.
I would say Marcus is right. You know, films about football aren't good. I think there's watching actors play football is like watching footballers act. Do you know what I mean? It's got that weird uncanny valley, sort of jarring
and
feel
never the
to
twain
it.
Shall meet.
Absolutely. So I think. I would agree with Marcus, actually. I enjoyed the Arsenal Stadium Mystery the most because football is incidental in it, isn't it? It's not really a football movie. It's a movie where football happens in the background. And obviously Soccer Dog is the worst movie, like, probably that any of us have ever seen. But I would say, because it was so bad, I at least thought it was funny. And I think the one I've enjoyed least, possibly because of a hangover, was A Shot at Glory. I found it just hard to watch.
That's a shame.
Because of the consequences of my actions, to be fair.
I kind of got to come down to the film that I saw on Holloway Road all those years ago, Goal. It just ticks a lot of boxes for me, just personally. I can't ignore the shots of like the grainy sort of grey kind of shots of Newcastle United's ground. There's something in there for me, I think. But the worst one was probably Soccer Dog.
Oh yeah, Pete. I often sort of bring up the fact that you gave Goal 9 out of 10. Had you have chosen a different film that was better than Goal, you're basically saying, oh yeah, that, well, A Shot of Glory was a 10 out of 10 for me.
Hey, what's your point, Marcus? What's your point?
Yeah. The film that most people are suggesting to me, and it is every day. So again, guys, we don't need suggestions for how we're going to end the league. We also don't need suggestions watching Charlton Soccer. It's a good film. Everyone saw the film when it came out. Has everyone here seen Charlton Soccer?
I've not seen it, actually.
No.
Well, maybe we'll get on to it eventually.
Yeah, Pete, tell us what we're going to do. Just tell us now.
Well, next Monday's show is, if that was the main, that was your roast dinner, here's your dessert. Final score. When two terrorists kidnap ex-soldier Michael Knox's niece, he employs all of his skills to rescue her and possibly foil a plan of mass destruction as well. Starring your friend and mine, Dave Bautista, from the wrestling. If the Pelé film was Pelé doing Karate Kid, this is West Ham doing Die Hard.
Oh, wow. Okay, has anyone checked the running time? Do you want me to check it real quick?
Yeah, please do. Pete, I remember you watching this.
It's 1 hour 44, not bad.
That's all right. That's all right.
Not bad. Yeah. And it was filmed at West Ham Stadium. The last thing to actually be filmed at West Ham Stadium was this. So they blew it up effectively.
I like the idea of watching Bautista run around Upton Park. Yes, please.
Oh, I'll be up for that. And him running around, he's such a big bloke. They've given him big dad jeans. And just while you're watching it, guys, just check out how big his jeans are. It's hilarious.
All right, great.
Big dad
Sounds
jeans.
Good.
Boot cut. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we look forward to it. What was it called? Final Score?
Yes, Final Score.
Final Score. Apparently a budget of $20 million. And at the box office, it didn't even do $800,000. So, no.
Oh dear.
Perhaps we can chuck him a few quid with a bit of revenue. I don't know.
No, we're helping.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. But Dave Bautista, we're trying to help you, mate. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. Andy and Jules are back tomorrow, so get involved there. And of course, wonderful things happening over at the Patreon, so do think about that if you haven't previously. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You are welcome.
Thank you, Pete Donaldson.
Dan, 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 goal.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you very, very soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
and Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman, I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.